Welcome to Season 2 of the Healthcare Fraud Shield podcast. Healthcare Fraud Shield is a leading provider of fraud, waste, and abuse detection software to healthcare payers. Our innovative suite of integrated products includes AI, prepayment, postpayment for both medical and pharmacy, case management, and a reporting tool. If you'd like more information about Healthcare Fraud Shield, visit our website at www.hcfraudshield.com. Thank you for listening. Hello, welcome to the Healthcare Fraud Shield podcast. This is episode 3 of season 2, and this one is on AI or artificial intelligence and the challenges in healthcare fraud detection. Joining me today is Bill Van Fleet, who I'm very excited to have on today. So Bill, why don't you introduce yourself?
Oh, thank you, Karen. I am a data scientist at Healthcare Fraud Shield. I'm also an accredited healthcare fraud investigator. I've got a background in biostatistics. I have an MS in biostatistics, a master's degree in medical anthropology. So I've got kind of a interesting combination of background here. So it's actually ends up being very applicable to the work that we do in fraud detection.
Well, thank you for joining. And I think I learned something new today. I've heard you introduce yourself a lot, and I did not know about your medical anthropology background. So I just learned something new. Thank you. All right. Well, let's just dive right in. So AI, we hear about this term or phrase used a lot, and a lot of people refer to it as a buzzword. I think there's some questions around whether people are really doing AI. They say they're doing AI. So why don't you kind of explain what AI is for our audience?
Yeah. So I think as people commonly use AI, if you when you encounter, AI in the movies or whatever, you think of artificial intelligence. And I think, when you see that type of thing in the movies, television show, popular culture, it tends to be artificial general intelligence, thinking of, autonomous robots that go around and kind of operate on their own. So that's what a lot of people think of when they hear the term AI. When we do AI, we think of it more as, more of advanced applications in machine learning. So we're not really trying to create autonomous robots that will go out and detect fraud. But what we do want to do is be able to leverage, the most advanced technologies, machine learning models, in order to really create models of healthcare data and situations that we find in healthcare in order to best detect healthcare fraud. So it's really these AI models really give us the ability to create a much better representation of reality than we would have been able to do, 10, 15 years ago using, more traditional statistical models or, even kind of the, early versions of machine learning models, which kind of relied more on, the kind of more limited hardware capability. So, that in my mind, that's at least the difference. So, we've got kind of the AI in popular culture versus the kind of AI in practice, where, of course, we aspire to create fraud finding robots someday. But in practice, current state, we're using sophisticated machine learning models. And that's what we refer to as AI.
Great. Thank you. So that's helpful. I know a lot of folks in the industry, including myself, and I probably should have included my name in the introduction. I don't think I did, but Karen Weintraub, I'm on all of these, but just in case we have some new audience members. So, for folks like me who work fraud, waste, and abuse issues and cases and have worked this for a very long time, we find that healthcare data is very complicated. So explain why it's so complicated and how AI can be used to kind of navigate through those obstacles.
Yeah, so I guess the thing that you have to think about with healthcare data, especially for someone just starting out in data science, for healthcare is that there's a very steep learning curve And the reason behind that is, if you think about it, it makes sense. I mean, medical providers, they spend a lot of time in school and practical training in order to learn how to do the things that generate medical claim data. And that's primarily what we work in is medical claim data for health insurance companies. So, just the process that generates the data is very complex. And then, so you've got the clinical side of performing the service, but also billing is a whole discipline unto itself, medical billing. So you end up with a high degree of complexity in the data itself. And it really, it takes a lot of subject matter expertise to understand, what you're analyzing in order to really set up the analysis in a way that will do what you want it to do. So I think that's part of the challenge. What AI enables us to do is to really more effectively model the complex data that we see. Especially, over the past maybe, 10 years or so, we've had enormous advances in the capability of hardware. It's kind of what used to be called big data, but I think we just take it for granted now. And that's given us just a huge ability, just a really increase in our capability to analyze these massive data sets and to be able to use machine learning on those huge data sets to really kind of model what's going on. And I think that's really the secret to being able to create models that perform like we need them to for fraud detection.
And I would imagine with the advancements in not just, the models themselves, but the hardware, the speed at which you're able to find things in the data probably has increased as well.
Yeah, it has. I mean, qu quite dramatically. I remember, when I first started, back in, oh goodness, this was, the middle 2000s. I mean, we would wait, hours. Sometimes analysis would take a day to return, and now it's a matter of seconds or, maybe minutes. For ambitious for some of those things that would just be, that would just take a very long time. You'd have to wait for just to get results back. So, what that means is that, when we're running something that takes an hour or 2 hours, a day, we're really doing some heavy processing, and that has just really increased our ability to look at the data.
Yeah, no, that's great. Obviously, that helps not only when folks are looking at things in the post-payment world, but that especially comes into play on a prepayment, world as well when you're looking at things real time or near real time as much as possible.
Right.
All right. So I hear a lot of the terms, and through your tutelage, I've learned a lot about the different types of models and the terminology around it. So why don't you explain about, I know you've talked about supervised models. Why don't you go into a little bit more detail around those?
Yeah, so when we're thinking of fraud detection, I think the first place that I started, I think the first place a lot of people start in is thinking that, if we have an indicator of a fraud case in a data set, well, couldn't we just create a model that would be able to predict, given a set of features or predictors, that a claim or a provider or some other thing is potentially troublesome or a potential fraud case or would make a good lead. So that really relies on having data that is labeled in a way so you can tell fraud cases from non-fraud cases. And if you have that type of data set, then you can use something known as a supervised classification model. And supervised means that you're trying to predict a known outcome. So in this case, it would be fraud versus not fraud. And this actually, it happens to be the gold standard. So, you know, if you have an indicator in your data set and you're able to use that to classify observations into something that is suspicious versus not suspicious, then you can use a supervised classification model to create a mathematical representation of that. And then you can apply that to new data and find, you know, potentially new cases in that new data set. So the problem that happens is that in reality, we almost never have completely labeled targets, and the target is that category. So we, what happens is that we may be dealing with fraud cases identified through a case management system, for example. So if we're able to have a list of known fraud cases, we can go and find those in the data set and create a model that will predict, you know, whether those are, or let me back up a second. Find those in the data set and then create a flag or an indicator that says, you know, whether a provider came from that case management category, the known fraud cases, or from potentially, you know, non-cases or, you know, non-fraud cases. So we have two categories. The problem that we end up dealing with is that, you know, there's no way that we have ever found all the fraud cases that could possibly be identified. You know, and that will never be the case. So what happens is we end up having to deal with incomplete labeling of data. And when you try to train a model on that, you end up with you end up basically creating a model that doesn't do as good a job at identifying cases because it's actually training on known cases, but also unidentified cases that are labeled as non-cases. So they're kind of incorrectly labeled in there, which creates all kinds of problems. So, you know, all those supervised classification models are great when you've got the right data. You almost, at least in this industry, you almost never have that right data to work off of. And even when you do, I mean, you've got other challenges to deal with too, such as, you know, something that we call target imbalance, where, you know, healthcare fraud is a really rare occurrence, fortunately. It happens, and when it does happen, it can get very expensive, but it's a really rare occurrence. So let's say you have 100 observations, and maybe two of those are fraudulent. If you just naively fit a model to predict, to distinguish between your fraudulent and non-fraudulent observations, more often than not, the model's just going to label everything as a non-fraudulent observation, which means, you know, actually it's 98% correct, which, you know, that seems pretty good until you realize that what you're actually interested in is those 2% that it just kind of, you know, steamrolled over and labeled those as non-cases. So that target imbalance ends up being a big problem as well. And that's something that we have to pay close attention to in modeling. There are certain ways to get around that, or at least to address it. But it is something that we have to deal with.
So let me know if I'm characterizing this correctly. So supervised models, there's value in that because
Yes.
we are looking at things that we know we should be finding, but there's a bias because it's not inclusive of everything. So what would be the alternative, or what would be other approaches to take, either as that alternative or as a complement? How would you then work through that?
Well, I think that's an excellent question because there is an alternative, and it's something that we call anomaly detection. So rather than trying to directly classify fraud cases using labels, we can actually use the data itself in order to establish kind of really normal patterns that we see in the data. So we can use the data to tell us what's normal and then look to see what's abnormal. And a lot of times those abnormal observations are kind of really what we're interested in finding in fraud detection anyway. So, you can think of it as, in the case of, say, looking for upcoding, I think is a good example. So if you have, if you have a data set where you have a certain, you're able to model patients demographically, capture their demographics, capture their underlying diagnoses, and you see that just about everybody has a certain level of service, except for this handful of patients who have an extremely high level of service, then that would be an anomaly. And that's the type of thing that we'd be able to find using anomaly detection. So, anomaly detection's great. There are some catches though, and they're kind of big ones. So once you identify your anomalies, you really need to have some subject matter expertise in order to figure out if those anomalies are material or not, if they truly make a difference. So going back to our upcoding example, let's say we have a few patients who are, receiving services at a much higher level than we would expect given the model. Someone with the right subject matter expertise might be able to look at those patients and determine that, yeah, well, actually, it's okay, it's perfectly fine. Your model isn't fully capturing what's happening in reality, and those patients are not really an anomaly. That higher level of service is actually explainable. And I think that's where that subject matter expertise comes in. Could also go the other way. They might look at the cases and say, hey, this is not explainable, and this is a true anomaly. We need to take a closer look at it investigatively.
That point resonates so much with me, and I probably talked about this to the nth degree, but I was just having a conversation the other day about this type of scenario. And another thing to take into consideration isn't just having that understanding of the overall patient care, but just understanding the demographics, the product types that you're working with, because every payer is so different. And it could be something as simple as a contract for one provider allows for this behavior and doesn't allow for it for anyone else. And that's driving something that doesn't look right when in reality it's fine. But the
Right.
data is telling you it doesn't look right. And then it's not until you really dig into it and realize they've got some special contract in place that says, yes, you can do this.
That's a very common occurrence. That's an excellent thing to point out because I mean we'll find anomalies in the data that are true anomalies. They don't make sense given what we've captured in the model, but then when you go back to the contract, is perfectly explainable. I mean, it's spelled out that the proprietor is supposed to be building that certain code. So, yeah, that makes absolute sense. It's very common.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. And then something else that you've talked about before is the word predictors. So why don't you explain to our audience a little bit about what that is and what that means?
Yeah, so the predictors are this is I think of the predictors or you also hear them called features. These are really the secret sauce to machine learning in healthcare. And this is where the subject matter expertise really comes in handy. The predictors are these are what you capture in the data that help your model determine, whether something is an anomaly or not, or it helps it make a prediction. So these are actually the terms or the facts about the data that the model uses in order to make a prediction. And these could be anything. I think an easy way to think of it is if you're, say, you're creating a model that uses diagnosis codes, you would fit the model in a way that it would look at the diagnosis codes for a patient. And if a patient has a certain diagnosis or a combination of diagnoses, it would make a certain prediction. And, so that's essentially what a predictor is. The types of things we capture could be, anything from patient demographics, which is, that's important for risk adjustment. It's kind of just very, kind of basic data analysis. It's done all throughout healthcare, from epidemiology to, actuarial science. I mean, it's just all over the place. But just these basic, age, sex adjustment, things, the underlying condition of the patient, comorbidities, even, types of services, procedures that the patient received, location of service, all these can be predictors. This is certainly not an exhaustive list. These are just examples. You can also derive predictors from the healthcare data. You can create new predictors based on what you see in the data. So it's it's a process. It's a very iterative process, and it's something where it helps a lot to work really closely with someone who's just very familiar with the data set and the subject matter. Even to the point of having someone who is familiar with that clinical specialty is extremely helpful. So so that's something that is important. I think for a data scientist without the clinical expertise, I think it's really important to be able to identify people you can work with who, have that subject matter expertise for sure.
All right, I'm going to throw a question at you that maybe you didn't expect. So here we go. So,
Okay, let's try.
all right. So obviously AI is extremely valuable. Traditional fraud, waste, and abuse solutions that folks like ourselves use it at payers and who folks use our company as well. Usually they're used to a rules-based system, and there's been this, expansion into including AI. Do you think that companies should abandon a rules based system, use both, or use one or the other? And I guess why or why not?
I really think the two approaches are complementary, because you're really looking at really different things. I mean, with the rules-based system, you're able to really codify situations that you see in the data that have been problems in the past. And I think that's really important. And you're able to do it explicitly. So, rather than relying on statistical patterns in the data to be found by a model, you can actually go in and configure a rule to catch something that to look for. And it's really good for catching rare occurrences. So if you have something that might happen, once every 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, but when it does happen, it could be catastrophic. Just a really serious exposure. That's the type of thing that a rule is going to protect you from, where a machine learning model may not. If it has not encountered enough examples of that situation, it's not going to capture it in the model. So in that situation, I think a rule is definitely preferable. Now let's kind of think about something. Think about it a little bit differently. The problem that I have is that, I don't always know what to look for in advance. So what I've found really helpful is to use something like anomaly detection, which would be, based on machine learning, to look at data and then find unusual patterns in the data and then investigate those patterns to see what's happening. In a lot of those situations, if you don't know about it in advance, you would not have been able to create a rule. But what you're able to do using machine learning is to find those patterns in the data and be able to understand what they are. And then you can capture those in a rule and be able to catch them going forward. So I think in those, kind of if you look at those two different scenarios, rules and machine learning or AI is really complementary. And it's, I don't know, it's really hard to imagine having one without the other. I think you really need both to have a just a really, comprehensive system.
Yeah. No, I thank you for that. I would agree. I can tell you our own investigative team has been very fortunate to have you and your team, and we have found things through AI that we wouldn't have found in the rules area. And then just as you said, we were able to, figure out what the patterns and the behavior that it was that was driving, those things to pop up in AI, and then be able to create rules around that to continue to monitor what we know is a problem, and then keep looking for things that we didn't know was a problem. So it's been very helpful.
Yes, that's great to
For
hear.
sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. We always appreciate your guidance in that area. Well, I think that is all we have for today. I really appreciate your insight. It's very helpful, and it's also helpful the way that you explain things. It's easy to understand. Some of us who aren't data scientists, it can be a little overwhelming to understand some of the nuances of models and formulas and all of that. So I always do appreciate just how easy you make it for folks like myself to be able to kind of wrap my brain around what it is that you and your team do. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, Karen. I'm just thrilled to be a part of the podcast.
Excellent. All right. Well, then we thank our audience for joining us today, and maybe Bill will have you back on another one. So thanks again, and we'll talk to everyone soon.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.